My name is Adam Sandler, and I feel stunned about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, and welcome to a very special episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Today I'm talking to someone I've known for a really, really long time. And the truth is we are friends. We've known each other since we both got started way, way, way back in the day. And so today, a conversation with a good friend of mine. Adam Sandler. You know, we have been friends for a really long time. Yeah. I met you when you came to Saturday Night Live. I was working there.
Yes.
And I remember you.
You and Odenkirk and
me, Odenkirk, Smigel, and Greg Daniels all like shared one back part of the office.
Yes.
And you would come in.
Very cocksure.
Okay. That's exactly what I wanted to talk about. You are the most confident young man I've ever met in my life.
Yes.
And I admire that.
Thank you. It was just sheer drive and a little, mostly stupidity that made me that way. But I certainly went for the laugh. I was competing with Farley, by the way.
Yes. I remember thinking I envied you so much because I'm a little old. I'm a couple of years older than you, but I was still young. But it took me years and years and years and years to grow my confidence. Just years and years and years. And you came out of the gate confident and you had the goods. But I remember thinking, how do you get that? How do you come from, being this kid from this town in New Hampshire,
right
over the border to, yeah, I got this. This is what I should be doing. Where did that come from? Is that your dad? Is your mom?
My dad and mom always were very, telling me I was good at stuff. They always loved me and had my back. They talked about how good I could be at things. You know, my father was definitely, he gave me, realism of what I'm not good at too, but, but they definitely told me, you know, you could do this, you could play guitar, you could sing, you can, you know, you can't dance. So I tried to dance a little bit to be the triple threat that my grandmother said I should be. And then they said to eliminate the dancing and concentrate on the
other. So you lost the dance.
Yeah, I lost the dance. But I was nuts. I was certainly, and I think it was just, I told so many friends in New Hampshire when I left to be a comedian that I was going to be huge. I said, I'm going to be huge. And I would put myself in a corner, like, it's getting bigger. People are starting to notice, and no one was noticing really, but I was like saying all this stuff to my hometown kid buddies that everyone's talking about me, and they weren't talking about me, but I just put some weird thing in my head, like, I got to get this done, man.
See, I heard a story. There's a friend of mine witnessed this.
Yeah?
A stand-up comedian, Ron Richards, a guy I knew from years and years and years ago when I was first starting out. And Ron Richards told me that he was in a club when Eddie Murphy was just starting out. And nobody showed up that night. No, there was no one in the audience. And all the other comics were pissed and angry. And this is, saying this is ridiculous, fuck this. And a lot of them left. Ron Richards stuck around. Eddie Murphy went out, I don't know if he was like 17, 18, right, and did his whole set there for nobody. Uh-huh. And when I heard that story, I was thinking about that story the other day, and I thought, I think Adam would do that. I think you would just be one of those people that, like, well, if there's one person in the audience, I'm going out there and doing it because I'm going places. I got stuff to do.
Yeah.
This is what they've come to see.
That's funny.
It takes a level of confidence and in your ability to be able to say to your friends in New Hampshire, I didn't say anything to anybody.
Oh, really?
No, I never said, hey, keep your eye on me. This kid's going places. I always kept my cards close to my chest.
Sure. I like that better. That's the better place to be.
I know I did it out of fear and hedging my bet. Like, I don't want to be able later on to have flamed out and have people say,
right,
what happened?
But that's the smarter way to do it. That's why I'm saying I was kind of stupid. I had a big mouth. I would say you know, make comments about myself when I was so young. I was 17 when I started, and I was just telling people when I went to NYU my first year, I would tell my friends, like, yeah, we're picking up steam. People are starting to... And
then, who's we, by the way? That's the other thing. What I love about this is that you have an entourage in your mind, you know?
Me and the Sandman are picking up steam. I don't know.
We are going places. Who? Did you see? There's going to be other guys here soon.
Just have a lot of seats available for me and all of us. But yeah, I don't know, Conan. I was psychotic because I do remember... telling Lauren when I was with you in the first couple of weeks,
right,
and sitting down, you know, you first get the show, and then you sit down and talk to Lauren. I remember telling Lauren, "Hey, I'm going to be huge," and he was staring at me like I was nuts. I was like, you know, I'm going to be the next Eddie. I came with a big mouth, and you know, I was just hanging out with a bunch of comedians before, and they were like, my act was never cocky. I was never cocky.
No,
but I don't know, I positioned myself in my head, I got to do this, I got to do that. I gave myself a ultimatum or something. So, and my father, I remember, used to say, if you don't make it by 23, or he gave me an age, he goes, you'll come work for me. And I remember.
What did your dad do for, I met your dad and I knew your dad, but what did he do?
Electrical contracting.
Okay.
He did that in Massachusetts, in Western Mass. And I remember going, okay, good, I have that. And then I would start going, 23, I better hurry up. I got to get this done before I wasn't upset about having to work electrical contract. I didn't even think about that. I was just more upset about having to tell the guys in New Hampshire I didn't make it. So that's why I was like, I got to really figure this out quick. I had a time ticking in my head.
I'm going to put this in context because... at the time, there were all these other young people that came in, funny, talented young people, and people would think of them as being hyper-confident now, but at that time, they weren't. Like, I have a very clear memory of Chris Rock, mm-hmm. and Chris Rock, when he showed up at SNL, was very quiet mm-hmm. and very kind of, you know, tentative, and he'd come around at night and he wasn't sure he had the right idea. And he would peek his head in and go, "Hey guys, what are you working on?" You know, he wasn't the Chris Rock that we know now.
Right, right.
He had the talent, but he hadn't built up that confident stage persona that he needed. Spade was another guy who was walking around kind of asking people, "What are you guys working on? Anybody have any ideas for me? Okay, I'll go away now.
Right,
hope I didn't offend anybody." Yeah, you know,
they were nice.
They were, well, you know, they were testing the ice to see if it would. And you, were incredibly different. You were very, you know, you knew what you had. You weren't worried about it, or you didn't let us think you were worried about it.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't even think I was worried about it then. I worry more now about, oh man, what do I got to do? If I take a part in a movie, I'm terrified that I'm not going to do something right. But back then, I was like full steam and just... I remember when you wrote the that update for me about the vacation, a guy who... I did this thing where I was a travel critic or something mm-hmm. and... just talked about going to hotels and never leaving the hotel.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And you wrote that all for me, man. Uh-huh. I couldn't believe it because I couldn't write like you. And it was my first year, and that was one of my... I think that was my first update.
Wow. Okay.
And you wrote this giant, hilarious piece, and that kind of influenced in the way I started writing for myself, a little odd, a little weird endings on... jokes that seemed like they were going to go one way and they went the other way. You influenced me there, but I didn't kill with that, but that started making me go, okay, that's the style of comedy I want to do.
Yeah. Can we do another take where he says it did kill? It really did kill.
It only didn't kill because of me. Your stuff was the best because I remember Downey loved it. Everybody loved it. But I was nervous out there.
You know, what's interesting. You mentioned taking parts in movies. Everyone listening to this right now knows, I mean, you've been doing comedy at this hyper successful level for so long. One of the points that's always fascinated me is you are an excellent actor. You really are a terrific actor. And you told me, you were sitting in my office one night, and you told me you loved me, which was a different thing we'll talk about later. we kissed a little. We remember when we kissed a little bit?
Yeah.
And you put your hand on the nape of my neck, and I was like, okay, well, there was that. No, you told me, you said, yeah, my hero, the person who I kind of wanted to be growing up was James Caan.
Oh, right, yes.
You told me that, and at the time, I remembered not understanding. Like, James Caan, you mean from The Godfather? And,
right.
And I'm trying to equate him with this really young, super goofy guy.
Right.
And then, I want to say about a month ago, I'm flipping channels, and I saw this 1970s movie, I think where he played an assassin. And, you know, he's with Robert Duvall, and he plays an assassin, and they turn on him, and then he goes after the guys that turned on him. Uh-huh. One of these movies, and it's classic 1970s James Caan, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I get it.
That's funny.
That you have this intensity. When I've seen you play serious roles, you don't have to say much, but the eye goes to you, and you really know how to do it.
That's cool. I loved him, and I don't know if I told you, I just moved out here. And I was on the Paramount lot. Oh, I worked with MTV. And yeah. They were doing Unplugged on the Paramount lot, I think. This story might be off, but they're doing Unplugged. Somebody's playing there, some giant band like Nirvana or somebody cool. And I went to see him. And as I'm going there, I see James Caan. It's before Nirvana. It's because I was young. I was like 22. And I'm walking to go see him. Whoever the band is, and I see James Caan, and he's in the Misery makeup.
Yep.
And he's got all this bruised up face and all made up and stuff. And I see him, and somebody goes, "That's James Caan." I go, and I'm walking, I'm like, "Holy cow, I'm about to meet James Caan," because I'm walking past him. And I said, "Hey, Mr. Caan." And he's nice, and he looked at me. I go, "Hey, I just moved out here. I'm going to be an actor." And he goes, "Oh, good luck. That's great." And I said, "My grandmother, because my grandmother used to say it too. I said, my grandmother thinks I'm going to be the next you." And he goes, "Oh, you don't want to do that."
That was funny. yeah.
Man, I guess because he was Jewish too, it connected with me like he wanted to be a representative.
Well, he's Jewish. He's tough. He's right. A badass. Yeah. And he's the coolest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he slept with the most consecutive Playboy Playmates.
Oh, is that right?
I think he has the record.
That's fun.
I could, you know, I just want to put that out there. James Caan, feel free to call in. I wish it was a call-in show. Call in if I'm wrong, but I think he has the record for, I think he lived at the Playboy Mansion.
Yeah.
And he just kept, it's consecutive months. He just kept getting him under his belt.
That's funny.
So, yeah.
One of the few guys who, when Burt Reynolds would hear he's at the mansion, he'd be like, "All right, call me when he's not there."
I'm going to settle down a little bit. Here's what I want to say. The Netflix stand-up special is one of the finest pieces of work. I was so happy for you. It is so well put together.
Oh,
it is,
man,
so beautifully put together as a stand-up special, but I love the way it cuts from rehearsal to massive arena to tiny space again effortlessly. And you're having a really good time.
Yeah.
That felt to me like that must have been a labor of love.
It was. It's like you right now, I'm sure. Being on the road again.
I love it.
We were, you know, older than we were. Back then, I don't know if I appreciated it as much because I was so much about, you know, when I was 23, 24 on the road, I was like just trying to get stuff done, I guess.
Yeah.
Now I'm on the road. I was on the road. I still try my hardest. I didn't want to do good stuff, but it's less of like, oh man, if I do this, then I'll get that. I was more just in the moment more and enjoying being on stage and trying to write jokes all night long. It was fun again. Like it would be 3 a.m. and I'd be writing stuff down on my phone, what I thought was funny at that moment.
Right.
And just trying it out that night. And that special was definitely a lot of work. Worked hard putting it together, right?
Yes, can tell a lot of work went into it.
Yeah.
And so many songs.
Yeah,
I think the special is, maybe 50% music.
Yeah, maybe.
And really enjoy the stand-up, but then those songs are all new, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. And some of them feel like they would take a lot of work to learn how to perform them effortlessly. Like there's some really, what's the song? I need my keys.
My phone wallet keys.
My phone wallet keys.
That was tough.
And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking like, okay, that would take I would never memorize that. Right, try and get it wrong. It would be scary to do in front of a lot of people.
Oh my God. Yes. I would actually skip that one a lot. Like I'd look back at Dan Bula, the piano player.
Who's great, by the way. Who's great. Yeah. You guys click really well.
We did it for like 2.5, 3 years, ran around together and got to know each other. I love him. He wrote a song that he wrote Phone Wild Keys, by the way.
Yeah.
And he also wrote a song that I played on your show about my old chair and giving away my old chair. I did it like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I said to Sandy Wernick, my manager, who you know was very goofy, I said, I'm thinking of doing stand up again. I'd love to have somebody young to hang out with to try to help me out writing stuff. And he said, he sent me Dan's tape and he played that song. And my old chair song, and I just thought the kid was funny as hell. And then I started hanging out with him, and we do the stuff together, and write jokes. And this other kid, Paul Sato, he wrote a movie called The Cobbler that I was in. He did that with Tom McCarthy, and I told him I was thinking of getting stand up going again. So the three of us did a lot of stuff.
That's great. You're mixing it up. You can tell you're working with different people. You mixed it up. You go out there and. I love seeing the process of you assembling it. And then you're clearly having fun. There's one song where you're mentioning an old lady, and you point to the crowd.
Hero, yeah.
And then you point to this old lady.
Grandma.
And grandma. And there's an old woman in the crowd, and the camera got her and stayed with her.
You guys relentlessly
keep the camera on her, and she doesn't know what's happening.
That was amazing luck, man. That lady was the guy who owned the place, Jamie.
Yeah.
It's the Hayworth Theater.
Yeah.
And it was this. His grandma was at the show, and he said, "You mind if my grandmother watches? She likes you." I said, "It's really filthy, man." He's like, "No, she likes
you." Get
stuff.
That? I get. This is the Dynasty Typewriter Theater. That place.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been down there. I have to tell you, I get so nervous for my audience if I'm going to do a show.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the show that I'm doing now is pretty clean, but some of the comics work pretty blue. I'm pretty clean, but you know.
Yeah, it happens.
But it's just, they're hilarious and they're doing some blue stuff and some of it can be pretty filthy and they're talking about real stuff.
Right.
And just before the show, every now and then, people will come to me in the green room or the dressing room and it'll be like, "This is O'Conan, it's your wife's parents' oldest friends, the Ditherworths." Right, and they'll come by and they'll be like, "We just came by and we bought tickets and we're going to be right up front when the girl sings about abortion, you know," and you're and I'm horrified and I want to protect them and get them out of there. And man. I'm worried the whole time and you can't do that. And then sometimes afterwards, they're just like, "Oh, I love the girl with the abortion." You know, they will.
That's funny, man. If I hear the wrong person's in the crowd, I'll have times where I'm ready. I'm in a good mood. You know how you find yourself in the right mood?
Yep.
You're like, "Oh, I'm going to be good tonight because I'm feeling like myself and nothing's making me nuts." And then all of a sudden somebody goes, "So-and-so is here." And you're just like, and your whole mood changes.
Yep.
I get like that because of what I'm talking about. And
I don't want to know who's
I don't
there.
Like knowing either. Yeah, right. I used to be so nuts that when I was first doing stand-up, I would never look out I'd hide before a show. You know, it wasn't like a famous thing. I was just like, "I don't want to see who's there." I would look into the lights while I was on stage. I didn't want to know who was not laughing or laughing, who was judging me. And now I'm so happy. I literally will meet the crowd before I'll get so anxious to meet them. The lights are still up while they're filing in, and then I'll walk out and be like, "Here we go." And then they'll be like, "Is that Adam?"
Oh, wow. I wouldn't do that.
I'm weird. It makes me feel more comfortable.
I'm superstitious about seeing them beforehand, but I'm curious. When you watch your own Netflix special, there's a camera that's showing these massive audiences, massive.
Yeah.
You know, it just looks like there's thousands of people in there.
Right.
Now you can see someone way in the back decide to go use the bathroom.
Yeah.
And I know me.
Yeah, I'm like
I'm
that.
Crazy enough that I'd be like, "Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That easy?
Yeah.
You can't hold it in?
I know.
For me?
I know.
You can't, that's how crazy I am.
Really?
Where are you going? When someone gets up and leaves and goes, I mean, there's a bunch of places I've played where they can go and get drinks in the lobby.
Right, yes.
And I'm just like, "Really?
Now you're getting the drink.
You need a Michelob Light right now?"
I used to bring Norm, Spade, Schneider, Swartzen, all these guys on the tours, and they would do long each time, and they were doing 20, 25 minutes each. And then when I got up there, the crowd was so needing to go to the bathroom that it would throw my rhythm off.
And you became their bathroom break.
Yeah, exactly.
It just, like, makes you crazy.
Exactly.
But you know what's funny is no one understands. They don't think Adam Sandler would ever think about that. They think you're in a different place. They don't know. You are going to notice.
Well, it's. I wish we could handle it better. The nights I'm light about it, I'm funnier. The nights that I get tense and jumpy, I had a manager when I was like 19, and I was at the comic strip, and I was on stage, and he saw me do well. And then he came back a week later, he brought people to see me, and I didn't do well. I ate it like for 10 straight minutes, and I came off, and I was like, "In this crowd, blah blah blah," and he said, "You didn't seem like you were last week. Last week it looked like you were having fun up there. You were getting mad. You were yelling at that person for doing something, and I was very sensitive back then. If I saw a crowd member not enjoying, if I got a laugh with most of the crowd and somebody didn't laugh, I'd always jump on that guy. What's the matter, buddy? You all right? Can I get you something? You know, I was psychotic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so much easier just to ignore it and let that guy come to you eventually. And the nights I do that, it's a great show. The nights I can't do that. I mean, when you do these giant theaters or arenas and stuff, and they pay the most to be in the front row,
yep.
A lot of times they're not your best audience.
No. Member. No.
And that's the only ones you see, and you're so mad at these guys for just being stiff, and they're mad at you for charging so much money for those seats. So there's a little friction.
We do a thing. I did a show. I do a show, and I'm sure you've had this too, where people, they pay a lot extra to have a meet and greet.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to meet, you know.
Yeah.
And so you meet with them, and then I was doing a show. I forget where we were. Sona, where were we? I forget where we were, but we did a show recently, and someone stood up in the crowd. It was in the Midwest, and she stood up, and she said, "I've always wanted to meet you, but I didn't want to pay money for that meet and greet." And so I jumped off the stage and walked past all the people that had paid.
Right.
And I gave her a hug, and the whole crowd was like, fuck those people.
I was
thinking, in this weird way, I'm having my cake and eating it too.
Right. Because
those people paid to say hi to me. Yeah. And now I'm totally telling them that was not necessary.
I would have done it.
All you had to do was stand up in the middle of the show or wait in the parking lot. And I will spend 20 minuts with you because I'm a very needy
You're decent.
I'm a decent man.
You're from the same school as me. If you make eye contact with me and you look like you need to talk, I'll go, yes, what is it? My kid last night, I brought Sadie.
You can't get mad at your kid for making eye contact. What are you doing? Don't look at me. Call Sandy Wernick if you have a problem.
No. So last night, I went to the Laker game. It was her first time sitting there, and I brought her, and we had a great time. And then after the game, I was leaving, and people were wanting to take my picture and stuff, and I took a few. And then I knew I had to get home for school, so I started passing people. And my kid would get so upset, just like, "The man wants to take your picture, Dad." I'd be like, "He'll be all right. He'll be all right. I got to get going." No. And she was getting upset, so I had to stop and take. She was being my conscious a little more, just saying, take the picture, make that person happy.
Whatever. Yeah. My son, what he does is he photobombs all of them. Uh-huh. That's his way of saying, "I own this."
That's good.
Which I think is actually pretty clever. I'm bringing this up because you mentioned getting angry. I noticed a long time ago that it's in your comedy through all your movies and through a lot of your act, the character that just suddenly loses it.
Right,
And I thought, it's interesting to me that you have a temper. You have a temper, and you kind of turned it into this. You use it. You use it. Whether it's any of the characters you played in movies or a lot of them, you can tap into it. And then when you did Punch Drunk Love, I thought, that's a side of you. You're able to embody both of them. I think that's why people like you so much, is you're confident, but you're also kind of act meek.
Right.
You keep your lips very close together and you talk and you look down and your jokes make fun of yourself a lot, but you're also incredibly over the top confident and you've got both at the same time. And I think you've also got that thing where you're nice and you're sweet, but you've got a temper. And I'm curious, like, and sometimes I think, like, oh, I wonder if that comes from having a 70s dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we had 70s dads. We didn't have, and you touch on this a little bit in your special, because I've thought about this a lot. You talk about something that I've joked about, too, which is they want us in school all the time.
Right, yeah.
To be with our kids, and you call it, you got to be here for Happy Tuesday.
Yeah,
for
right.
You got to be here for, and we were talking about how our dads were never at school.
Right, yeah.
Because your dad, my dad, if they came to school, it was a problem.
Right, yeah, exactly.
They weren't there to make fudge with us.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
You know, but yeah. I don't know if you've tapped into that kind of, my dad had a temper and has a temper, and your dad probably had a temper, and we have tempers, and I don't know if that's going away now or what.
I think, I mean, the biggest thing I got from my dad's temper was a little stronger than mine, like, but the thing he did that I'm calming down, but I've always had it, was quick to snap and go crazy full throttle, and then it would go away, and we were back to normal. My father used to yell at us in the house and scare the hell out of us, but then, you know, 2 minutes later, we were sitting having lamb chops and having a good time again and that kind of thing, and I do that in my movies a lot. Mm-hmm. I expect the audience to be okay with me snapping.
Oh, yeah.
And then being okay.
Well, they like it. I mean, it's in anger management, you've done all these movies where you lose it, and it's seeing you fight your temper. It's really funny.
Yeah,
funny. You're about to blow. You got to kind of keep it together.
Right.
And then you completely lose it, it's enjoyable.
Yes. I guess you're building it up enough that the audience says, okay, you can let them have it. But in real life, I'm getting better at that, Conan, trying to not snap quite as much.
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
We're here at your production offices, and I walked in, and everyone...
They're all nervous out there.
They're super nervous. They don't want to make eye contact with you.
A lot of young people out there who love you, man. They were so excited you were coming here.
Well, that's nice.
Yes. We were part of their lives, these children that work at the companies now.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yes. This kid out there was saying he had he sent away for a Conan audience T-shirt from when he was real young, and he was going to wear it in front of you, and then he got started feeling like he was going to be humiliated. But it is funny that these
I would have ripped him a new one. No, I would have.
Would have been fun to see.
I'm always touched when someone. There's also what I don't know. You must get a kick out of this. You get this all the time when people come up and I really like their work. They're funny. They're comedians, and I kind of look up to them. I think they're great, and they say, oh, you know. You must meet people all the time that got into the business because of they're watching you. And then now they're in the business.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's the best.
Now you're James Caan.
Yeah.
Now you're like, oh, aim higher, kid.
Yes.
Don't do what I did. I'm a mess. Don't be me. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Wait for this break. It's going to be one of our best breaks ever.
Now it's time for a segment. Conan O'Brien pays off the mortgage on his beach house.
Yes, this is where I get the word out on some products. Yes, I am paid for that word. And then I use that money to desperately pay down this massive mortgage I took out.
What about me? Why don't you pay me?
I pay you. I pay you in foodstuffs. I gave you fresh eggs a couple of weeks ago. I gave you... True story or not? That's a true story. I gave you...
Fresh eggs.
I did. Eggs. I've given you radishes. A big basket of radishes.
That's not payment.
Well, for most of man's history, yes, that was payment. For 99% of man's history in that timeline, you have been paid.
I can't pay my rent with it.
No. Isn't that tragic? You got to talk to your landlord about that. Because that's good barley I gave you.
Okay.
And we're back. We actually here didn't take any break.
No, you don't need it.
I just didn't. I really paused for a second, but you heard a commercial or something.
Just enough.
You know, you did something in the Netflix stand-up special, which, again, I really loved. And then you did this thing that totally took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting it. You did this song about Chris Farley.
Yeah.
And it got to me. It's a beautiful song, and it's funny, and I wasn't ready for that.
Right.
Which I applaud you for. Because
I couldn't wait for you to hear it, by the way, Conan.
Man.
I saw you at something. And I said, I'm doing the thing. You're going to like it, Conan. You're going to really like the ending. You probably don't remember that, but I was psyched for you to see because I knew how much you loved Chris.
Yeah. He was one of the first. I've mentioned this to people before, but he was. Remember when, if you had to get a. When people came in, they had to meet with Lorne in his office on, you know, right above the stage.
Right.
And
yeah.
Lorne would keep them waiting because he was always busy.
Right.
I remember coming in one day and there was this big, round, blonde haired kid with his hair combed down.
Right.
And he was bobbing back and forth in his chair and his jacket didn't fit. And he was waiting to meet with Lorne and it was Chris. And Odenkirk introduced me to him because Odenkirk knew him from Second City.
Yeah.
And so I said hi, and we giggled and goofed around a little bit, and then I had to go. And then I came back, like, the next day, and he's still, I mean, I think he waited a couple of days to meet with Lorne. Yeah. And he's bobbing in his chair, and so I was like, hey, you want a tour? And he was like, yeah, yeah. And then I took him on a fake tour. I just walked around, and I was like, see that guy holding that boom over there? That's old Boomy. We call him Boomy Joe. And it was all bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
See that? See those? Hey, fellas, you know, good to see you. That's Squanto and Pronto. And it wasn't their names. And I was walking around, and he got that right away. And he was cackling, and then he was doing it. And we were just goofing around like kids.
Yeah.
And then he did, I think, very quickly, Downey wrote the Chippendales thing. And then he blew up.
Yeah, that was superstar immediately. After.
Yeah, the him and Patrick Swayze being Chippendale dancers. And that was, I remember watching that, you know, like from under the bleachers and going, oh, you know,
That was it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But I wasn't prepared for all that footage and how there's footage of you, how young you were. You got him on my show. I saw that footage. I wasn't prepared for that. I'm like, oh my God, we were just kids.
I know. You looked so young in that. I tell you, I was doing the Farley song on the road, just me and guitar and piano and singing it. And it was, people liked it and they connected with it. And then we were talking about, should we show images just to really bring in, you know, Chris to life. And then we were arguing back and forth, like, well, we've been doing it without it. I don't know why we need to. And then we started looking at footage of Chris and we were like, oh my God, it's just so much fun to remind the audience how great the guy was and how sweet he was. And I felt the same. Him on your show makes me, when he covers his face and he's flirting with somebody, I forget.
We were flirting with, Chris and I pretended to.
Was it Elizabeth Shue or?
I think it was that. We did another bit once where Chris and I'm interviewing Chris, and then we noticed two attractive pages over by the doors. And of course, we do that stupid old Three Stooges thing where we cut to the door and we had pre-taped Chris and I dressed as pages.
Yeah.
And we're doing that really corny, like, yoo-hoo, and finger waves, you know, finger waves, like, hello, sweetie. And Chris was like, oh, I like the one on the left, because he's attracted to the one that's him. And
right.
I'm attracted to the one that's me, that freaked me out because it looked exactly like my mom. And but it was just weird. Hard to explain him to people, you know?
What about how good of a guy about you? He was definitely, when he walked into the room, everybody just was like, okay, here he is, the man. And but he just talked about you, Conan. He talked about Odie, and he cared about everybody else.
Yeah, he's sweet.
And always gave it up to the other guys. Didn't think he was as funny as other guys.
Which may have hurt him, actually. I think he could have used a little more self-esteem or some, you know.
Maybe.
You know,
maybe, yeah. I think it was that, and also the fact that he was genuinely such a nice guy. You talk about having quick temper. He was there too.
He was.
He could snap. Yeah, he was. He could back it up too. He was really, but he let it go quick, and they would laugh his ass off at how upset he would get, and he'd laugh at himself. But anyways, he did like other people's stuff, and he would run up to you if you did well on the show, and be like, "Oh my God, Adzy, that was so funny!" And he was so sweet.
That's one of the sweet things I think about in comedy. There are people that who are very talented, but they have a hard time giving it up.
Sure. Know?
And then there are people that really can give it up. And you always notice you and Farley are two people that were both souls that see something and just love it, and you can give it up. And that's a generosity which is very unusual in comedy. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It does. But you see a lot of comics are taking the measure of the other comic.
Sure. It's a lot easier to be able to give it up. I think when I first started and when I was 18 and on stage and I saw some other people killing, I definitely sat back like, holy shit. It wasn't that easy to go, that guy's way better than me. Like, I was very friendly with Colin Quinn when I was young.
Yep.
He kind of taught me that, giving it up to other guys. I met Colin when I was 17. He was hosting a show at the Paper Moon in the Village. He used to put me on stage, and like, they didn't like me there, but Colin used to kind of talk them into using me. And he always would say, that was so funny when you said this, and to give me confidence and stuff. And then I guess I was like, oh, yeah, that would feel good. And then I started doing that myself, but for other comedians. But I get the thing the other way, too. You when you see someone kill with something, you can go, oh, shit, I better get to work.
It can inspire you.
Inspire you. Yeah, it should just inspire you, but it also can knock you back and go, oh, fuck, what have I been doing? I better figure this shit out.
Right. I think you work harder than just about anybody I know. You are always working really hard, and you push yourself.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? Who's pushing you?
No, I think myself, but we've had great talks about calming down, and I know it's healthy.
You and I have had really good talks about this, yeah.
We late night talks. Maybe see if I can take 6 months off and do nothing so I can just relax and enjoy life. And like 3 weeks in, I started going, oh, man, I got to figure out what I'm doing. I can't just sit and not think. I got to write stuff down or come up with what the next movie is or something. I just like it. Like, I feel comfortable working.
This will make you feel better. I had a nice conversation with Bob Newhart, not podcast or anything. I just was hanging out with him.
Right.
I idolized the guy.
Yeah.
He's the man. And I'm talking to Bob Newhart, and he told me, yeah, I mean, I think Bob Newhart is 89, uh-huh. Might be turning 90. Uh-huh. And he just said, I took a little time off and I wanted to take some time off because I've been doing a lot of clubs and I've been in Vegas a lot. And so I took about 2 weeks off and I was sitting there in the living room and my wife looked at me and said, you're going crazy, aren't you? And he said, yes, I am. In that Bob Newhart way. And so he said, so the next day I was on the plane. And I'm like, oh my God, if he,
at 89,
there's no point. This is the thing you and I talk about is when are we going to, is there some medication we can take?
I know.
Technically there actually is, I think. But is there a way that it can just,
What are we trying to do right now? I don't know. We just love doing it. Something we think we're good at. I don't understand why I keep wanting to push and push and push. And I don't know why I can't sit still. When I sit still, like Thanksgiving, man, when the holidays come up, I am so nervous about my behavior and how I'm going to do at home and being there 4 days with my family. And that I love them all so much, but I know I'm going to snap and I know I'm going to... I can't handle the rules. Mother was yelling at what I wear. And
okay, let's talk about that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Every year you come to my Christmas party, and
I'm coming this year.
Okay, let's give the address out in a second. But I live so close to you. If I had a real arm, I could hit your house with my house with a baseball. But I can't. I can't really throw very far. But if I was like Dwight Evans and it was 1977, I could totally hit your
house. You could rooster it all.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you live very close by.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to share one story where, we live in this nice area and it's LA where people don't go up and bang on each other's doors. No one does anything like that. And one day I'm watching, I think I was watching a Patriots game and there's really no one around. My kids are upstairs, but my wife is gone. And all of a sudden my buzzer starts going and I was going crazy. And so I open up the front door and from beyond the gate, I hear Cody. And this is like, there are celebrity buses that go by that are looking for celebrities. And Adam Sandler is in the front of my house with his two kids. And he's like, Cody, Cody. And I open the door and he goes like, hey, buddy, how are you? And this is the thing, you say hey, buddy to everybody. And what I've noticed is that I've seen you, because our kids go to the same school. I've seen you with five-year-old girls. Adam Sandler will walk up to an old man and go, hey, ya, buddy. And then he'll walk up to a five-year-old girl and go, hey, ya, buddy, you're looking good. Love you, buddy. And the kid just looks up like, what? You know, hey, ya, buddy, you're doing great. Good to see you. A fetus could just be born. Hey, ya, buddy. Good to see you, buddy. How are you, buddy? So you're outside my house and you're yelling and you've got your two kids and you like push past, you're like, hey, we're coming in. You come push past me. You come in, your kids go right upstairs to play with my kids because they all get along. And you're like, what's going on, buddy? And I say, well, come on, sit down for a second. You go like, I can't stay long. You just came in. So I get you to sit down. I hand you a soda. We're there watching a football game for maybe 5 minutes. And then you're like, kids, we got to get out of here. And so you get your kids down. Your kids come running downstairs and their kids are like, daddy. And he goes, I know when we're not welcome. That's one of the funniest things. I think the whole running time was 7 minutes. I know when we're not welcome. And then I hear you, and then yelling and then up the street. Absolutely hilarious.
I go by your house every time I go by your house, because we go bike riding in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Every time I pass your house, I scream, go, Dad. And my kids laugh every time.
I've been in like school assemblies where the parents are there and the kids are there. And I don't even know, like Adam's sitting way in the, I don't even know he's there. And then they'll say something like, oh, we're also looking for a volunteer who can come on Pancake Day on Saturday. And then I'll hear a voice in the back go, it's Conan. You do that stuff in front of like 800 right, parents.
Man. We're done with that. No more elementary school together.
I know.
That hurts.
I know. That but it's still, best. Well, I wouldn't say it's the best. You say everything's the best.
Nah, it's the best, buddy.
You also, you will show up regardless of the event. It could be a funeral for a president.
Yeah.
And you will show up wearing basketball shorts.
Yes.
Giant balloon sneakers, mismatched t-shirt, and a balloon, vest of some kind, puffy vest,
and
a hat on sideways. What's going on there?
It's all about being comfortable. I think it stems from my mother making me dress nicer as a kid, and I hated it, and I was itchy. I think it's all from not wanting to be itchy.
Because you're always welcome that way at my home. I just sometimes I think that if you were, say, someday you won the Nobel Peace Prize for comedy, and you were brought to Oslo, and you got up on stage, and all the people there were wearing and you would be wearing a Lakers jersey or something,
And I'm doing better. I think I'm trying to dress better on occasion. I did that Meyerowitz. We went to Cannes, and I wore a tight suit, and I was in a bad mood, but I wore it.
You were in a bad mood?
Yes, but it was fun, but I don't love being in a suit. You handle it every night. You don't like it, do you?
Yeah, I'm not going to wear a suit anymore. Yeah, when we come back in January, I'm not going to wear a suit.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'll dress nicely, but I'm not going to wear a suit.
That's cool.
I'm just like, no, I can't do it anymore.
Are you going to do monologues up front?
Not. I can't do long ones because I got less time,
right?
Which I actually like. The whole theory is give myself less time and I might get better. I got to try something to shake it up.
That's great.
25 years, so...
So just kind of sitting down and talking.
I think we're going to, well, no, there's going to be comedy up front. I got to do comedy.
Right.
I want to do comedy,
right.
But I can't, I don't want to come out and stand there in a suit.
Right,
and say, oh, Trump,
right.
You hear what his acting director of foreign affairs said today? I mean, I don't want to do it. So
yeah, I got you.
We got plenty of people doing that.
Yeah.
No one needs me doing that.
So. Well, you've done it.
I'll make balloon animals or something.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Conan. It's going to be, but you're going to have one guest show?
Just one guest.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. It's going to be, Tuesdays it's you. It's going to affect your career a little bit.
Not at all.
You can't travel. I'm just going to come in. You've got to come in.
I'm fine with that.
Just, So what do you think? We can be happy? Can we be happy? That's the question is, can we be happy?
We are happy. We are very happy, me and you. And we have a good time. We like our families. We like that we got to do this so long. I think... We don't feel like we accomplished it all yet. Maybe there's more for us to say and do, and that's why we keep doing it.
I have known this guy for, Jesus, I'm not even going to say how many years because it's frightening. But
I think it's 30, buddy.
I think it's 30 years, and you are an exceptionally... The easy thing to say about you is that people know is you're very talented and you're very hardworking, but you are an exceptionally loyal and nice person. Do yourself a favor. I howled out loud to the point where I was asked to shut up when I was watching... Adam's Netflix special. It's really unique. It's a great approach. And what can I say? It's just pure entertainment the whole time. And I'm really happy for you.
I love you. Thanks for all that, Conan. You too. You're the man.
Yeah. I'm going to cut out all the stuff I just said, and then we're going to have you just say, you the man, and we're going to repeat it on a loop. And you're going to sound like an idiot. All right. Adam Sandler, everybody.
Who you the man? Who you the man? Who you the man? Who you the man? Who you the man?
And now it's time for a segment called Conan O'Brien Pays Off the Mortgage on His Beach House.
Okay, now it's time for a segment Sona does not like called True or False with Sona Movsesyan. Sona, many of the arguments that we have in real life revolve around your memory or lack of memory. Is that true?
I would say that's accurate.
What do you think happens?
I think that you ask me to do something, and then on my way to do it, I get distracted by a friend or something else, and then I just completely forget to do what you asked me to do.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible, because I've seen it happen. There was a time on the tour we just did where I really needed a banana, and they were on the other side of the room. And I remembered saying, they were on the other side of the room near where you were. And I said, could you grab me that banana? And you said, no problem. You started to walk towards where the banana was. And on the way, you started talking to other people that were in the room. And then you went and sat down and didn't get the banana.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that were sitting with me were astounded. They were astounded. And I looked at you and you were saying, what are you looking at me for, dude? And I wasn't even mad. I was more just...
I didn't say that.
What did you say?
You always make me sound like a dude, what?
Oh, come on.
I forget you. I forgot it. That's not what I do. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot it. And then you get mad at me.
But how do you forget from going from one end of the room to the other?
Because I got caught up in conversation and it's a banana. Who cares about a banana?
But the thing is, it's so funny. I wasn't even that mad. I was more scared for you.
Okay.
I really did. I was in that moment. I thought we have to get you a CAT scan.
Oh, okay.
No, I did. From a medical point of view, I consider myself a doctor. My knowledge of medicine, my dad's a doctor, so that makes me a doctor just from being around him. I was just concerned for you.
Wait, that's first of all, that's not true.
It doesn't matter what I say to you because you'll forget soon anyway. Come on. We're having a good laugh.
Also,
oh, wait, only I'm laughing.
The problem is that when I forget to do something and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to do it. That's not enough for you. You're like, I want you to feel bad for not getting me that banana.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I just kind of am like, I forgot to do it for you. You're like, how can you just, you basically have this, like, how can you just sit there and just act like you
forgot? I don't know how you can live when you know that you didn't get me that banana. How can you continue to live? You've got to live with that the rest of your life.
I never feel as bad about it as you want me to feel. And I think that it upsets you.
I think
you feel bad about a lot of things.
I think if I had, let's say I needed insulin to stay alive.
Okay.
And I was dying and I asked you to get my insulin the other side of the room, but you stopped halfway through because there was an episode of You Tell Me.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah. And you started watching that and I didn't get it. And then I went into shock. And then I passed away. You'd be at the funeral like, oh, he didn't get his insulin. Boo-hoo. TV show host didn't get his insulin.
That's not what I would do.
That was probably an extreme example.
Yeah, I would say so. You dying compared to you just eating a banana?
Oh, that was a good banana, though.
God. Well, you ended up getting up and getting it.
I went and got it myself. Fine. No, it was good. I learned.
You ended up with
you know
what's
great? I learned that I can go get a banana by myself.
Good.
That was a teaching moment.
That's what I wanted to do. That's why I didn't get you a banana. I wanted to teach you that you could be self-sufficient in getting your own fruit.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend with Sona Movsesyan and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Special thanks to Jack White and the White Stripes for the theme song. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.